Die Übersetzung von Jans Stimme vom Deutschen ins Englische wurde mit einer KI erstellt.
Мене звати Катя, ми з Києва, і нас сьогодні сюди привело те, що тут роздають гуманітарну допомогу від німців. У нас багатодітна сім'я, чоловік у нас військовий, і ну, ми отримали допомогу для дітей.
That is Katia. Katia is 25 years old. She has three children and is standing in a backyard in Kyiv on this Sunday morning. She told me she came here to get support from the Germans. Then she told me her husband is a soldier. And then she started to cry.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hello, I'm Jan Jessen, war and crisis reporter for the Funke Mediengruppe. You can find my reports in the NRZ, the WAZ, the Berliner Morgenpost, the Hamburger Abendblatt, and of course on our Funke Mediengruppe portals. I've been traveling in Ukraine again over the past few days, mostly in the south, in Kherson, but also in other southern regions. And then we drove to Kyiv. The Ukrainian capital was in a very tense state during the days we were there. At first glance, everything looked completely normal. Life goes on in Kyiv. The shops are open. The restaurants are open. At first glance, you get the feeling that life is somehow completely normal, that the war has been forgotten. But then the air raid alarms keep going off. And during those specific days we were there, it was exceptionally tense because everyone expected a major Russian airstrike to be imminent. A few days earlier, the Ukrainians had launched their own attack on Moscow, the Russian capital. I was in Kyiv because I wanted to cover an aid mission by people from Germany whom I know very well. We'll get to that in a moment. And of course, I also asked myself, what does aid mean when a war has been dragging on for so long that many people have stopped looking? When the willingness to donate in Germany is now declining? I tried to find an answer, not somewhere on the front line, but on a Sunday morning in Kyiv, in the Troyeshchina district. Troyeshchina is a district in northeastern Kyiv that feels relatively bleak. Lots of prefabricated panel buildings, multi-story high-rises, apartment blocks. The social structure is challenging. Many people are financially struggling. We were in a building that used to be an administrative office for the surrounding apartment blocks. On this day, 150 women had come here with their children to collect aid. Many of them had fled from other regions of Ukraine, especially from the east and northeast of the country. Others had always lived in Kyiv. What unites them all? They have young children and are in desperate need of support. And waiting for them are two men from the Ruhr region. Even the night before we went to this distribution station, there was another air raid alarm. Nothing happened during the night. The next morning, another air raid alarm. You notice it, of course. When you look people in the eyes, you can see that the war has left its mark. The faces are tired, people look exhausted, but at the same time, there's a certain composure. When it started in February 2022, and in the months that followed, as soon as the air raid sirens went off, everyone went down to the basement. Now people are much more relaxed. There are apps where you can check what is flying in. Are they Shahed drones, slow, long-range drones, or ballistic missiles? People base their decisions on this information. Do they go to the bomb shelter, the subway, the corridors of their apartments, or do they just wait it out? If ballistic missiles are coming, you have to seek shelter as quickly as possible. They travel very fast, and the damage they cause if they get through air defenses is immense. With Shahed drones, it's more manageable. Of course, people die from them too, but people stopped reacting to them immediately a long time ago. The brutal reality of this war is also this. It's not just adults who are affected. The children are too. In kindergartens and schools, they have learned that as soon as the sirens go off, they head to the shelter. Mothers hardly sleep at night because they move into the corridors with every air raid alarm. You can't get a full night's sleep. That's how it is now, in the fifth year of the war. The building we visited used to be an administrative office for the surrounding apartment blocks. Today, massive piles of boxes were stacked in this room, filled with diapers, baby food, children's clothes, toys, hygiene products, winter jackets, and sleeping bags. All things that families with young children desperately need. It was a warm summer day in June. The first women were already waiting in the yard, and people stood patiently in line in the hallway. Many obviously knew each other. The children played together. Others clung to their mothers. When you walked in, and especially André, my photographer with his camera, it was confusing for some of the children, you could tell. And right in the middle of this room, which was so packed with boxes, stood a man with long hair, a thick beard, a baseball cap, and shorts. That was Matthias Marun. Some NRZ readers might know him as a reporter. Today he's not here as a journalist. Today he is distributing aid. I've known Matthias for many years. For decades, he was a legendary reporter at the NRZ. He visited crisis and war zones, traveling through Chad, Sudan, the Balkan Wars, and like me, Afghanistan and Iraq. He is highly resilient to crisis and war and was always a role model for me as a young reporter.
You don't easily shake off 40 years of habit, but it's gratifying to suddenly realize I don't even need to take notes. Then again, that's exactly why I'm here.
A remarkable sentence. You don't have to write anything down anymore. For 40 years, he was the one documenting stories. Now he's trying to help people. And Matthias has always been defined by the fact that his reporting was incredibly human. He always had a big heart for the people he wrote about. A lot of empathy. I think that's also the crucial reason why he decided to provide aid. I notice it in myself too. When you are on the ground, when you have the privilege to go out there, talk to people, meet individuals in the darkest moments of their lives. You'd have to be made of stone not to feel. I have to do something too. I need to mobilize people in Germany who can help. He also has the experience to support people who might be in a war zone for the very first time. He can advise, stand by them. That was probably one of the reasons why he decided to do this. Together with his former colleague Wolfgang Kincher, who was the head of the local editorial team in Essen for many years, he travels to Kiev and Rivne several times a year. There is the Essen-based aid organization Ukraine Wir Kommen and the Hattingen Association Hand in Hand mit der Ukraine. The two work together. Wolfgang Kincher is active with Ukraine Wir Kommen, and they primarily head to Rivne, Essen's twin city. Together they then also drive to Kiev. They've got a van provided by the Lions Club that they pack with aid supplies. At the same time, they raise money so they can buy items locally. It all goes to families who desperately need the support, not just internally displaced people, but also locals in Kiev who are struggling to get by. I asked Matthias why he keeps making the trip, and if there was one moment where he realized, this is what makes it all worth it. He didn't have to think about it for a second.
Regarding the rewards of this work, one memory stands out vividly. On my first day, a young woman arrived with her daughter, or rather, she was heavily pregnant. When I handed her a food package, she sang a song for me. That was a profound emotional peak. It was the moment I realized that what I am doing here is deeply meaningful.
I never met this woman. I only know her through Matthias's memory. She was heavily pregnant, receiving a food package, and then she started to sing. It is not a grand gesture, not a lengthy speech of thanks, just a song. When he told me about it, I got goosebumps. I can imagine exactly what that moment was like. In that instant, it became clear to him, what you do there on the ground truly helps. And that is exactly what I always realize whenever I am out in the field, speaking with people and recording their stories. For them, it is incredibly important that you are simply there, that they feel they haven't been forgotten, that there are people who care about their stories. We also provided aid in Posad Pokrovsky between Kherson and Mykolaiv, and it was just the same there, this overwhelming gratitude that washes over you. It is deeply moving and, frankly, a bit humbling. But of course, it is an incentive to keep going, to return time and again, to help, to write down their stories, to keep these people from fading into oblivion. That morning, around 150 women were there with their children, along with a few husbands. They held babies in their arms, pushed strollers, and led toddlers by the hand. Many brought small gifts. There was a small box filled with drawings, sweets, and other items. It was wonderful, of course. Outside in the courtyard stood Katia, whom you heard at the very beginning. She had her little daughter with her, a young woman, 25 years old, with three children, Kolya, 6. Polina, the little one by her hand, 4. And Vladik, just 2 years old. Her husband had volunteered for the military on the very first day of the Russian invasion. I asked her what life in Kyiv feels like for her today, and then she cried. It was a moment where you don't immediately know how to react. Her little daughter looked up at her with wide eyes, not quite knowing how to handle the situation either. Seeing her mother cry was likely something she hadn't experienced very often. In any case, Katya then told me what her situation looks like right now.
It's very hard. Rockets and drones are constant and you hear shelling everywhere. We barely sleep at night. Even in kindergarten, the kids are constantly rushed to shelters due to air raids. It's grueling.
Katya says it is very difficult. Rockets and drones are constantly flying overhead and shelling can be heard everywhere. They can barely sleep at night. Even in the kindergartens, the children have to repeatedly go down to the shelters due to air raid sirens. She says it is grueling and utterly exhausting. For the children, there is no everyday life without war. The oldest, Kolya, is just 6. The war has now been going on for over 4.5 years. He can no longer remember a time without war. He knows air raid sirens, shelters, and nights where no one really sleeps. And yet, the next day, there still has to be kindergarten, school, life. This is even more true for the 2 younger children, who have never known anything other than this war. A short time later, I meet 2 other women, friends who came together, Natalia and Christina. Both are waiting for their turn, and both tell me very different stories. Natalia is 26. She is originally from the Sumy region in northeastern Ukraine, a region that remains under heavy fire to this day. At the beginning of the war, she fled to Kyiv with her family. Her home village is called Novomykolaivka, or rather, it was called that, because that village no longer exists. Her grandmother and her 3 brothers were also forced to flee. Today they live somewhere in a communal housing facility. I ask Natalia if she wants to go back one day. She answers immediately.
My husband is here. He is serving somewhere nearby. I think we will just stay here. This is our life now.
Not because she has forgotten her homeland, but because her life now takes place in Kyiv. Her husband serves in the army. The children are growing up in Kyiv. The war has shifted the center of her life, perhaps forever. Standing next to Natalia is Christina, 39 years old. She and her husband have always lived in Kyiv. Natalia and Christina met in this neighborhood. They keep coming here together to receive support. Christina's daughter, Milana, is 5 years old and has autism. Her son is 2 years and 7 months old. He had to undergo heart surgery immediately after birth. I ask Christina what the war feels like in Kyiv. Many people outside of Ukraine believe the capital is relatively safe. Looking at the images coming out of Kyiv, open restaurants, open cafes, people working in offices during the day, one might think so, but Christina experiences it differently.
When the invasion began, we first went to a village with the children. Just as we stepped out of the house, a rocket flew directly over us. I was so terrified, and for Milana, all of this is especially difficult. She is startled by every single siren and immediately points to the window. Now, my little son is afraid too. It is incredibly hard with small children.
Milana has learned what the sirens mean. She knows that something could happen again at any moment. And Sasha, the little boy, is now growing up with that exact same fear. Milana is autistic, making her exceptionally sensitive. Even though a daily routine of sirens and shelling has become her normality, she is startled time and again. She is terrified and tries to hide. For children like her, this is particularly brutal. Christina's husband lost his job a while ago, and she is currently on parental leave. "We get by somehow," she says. A short sentence. She doesn't say any more than that. While the next families collect their packages, Natalia tells me something else I hadn't expected. She has been pregnant 2 times in the middle of this war. She seems relatively resilient, very energetic. Not like Katya, who burst into tears. Natalia is composed. She shares the harrowing things she tells me in a very calm tone.
Коли було вторгнення тут в Києві, я ходила вагітна своїм першим Валентинчиком, йому зараз 3,10. Бомбили дуже сильно, я сиділа в укритті, ну це як не укриття, а було парковочне місце, це де машини зберігали.
When the Russian invasion began, I was pregnant with my first son. Today, he is 3 years and 10 months old. At the time, Kyiv was under heavy bombardment. We were sitting in a shelter, though it wasn't actually a proper shelter, just a parking garage. When the building was hit and the doors were blasted out, I was simply terrified. I cried, thinking, I just hope they don't kill me now. But I survived. And later on, I even decided to have a second child.
Рішилася ще на одного синочка мого Романчика. Йому зараз 8 місяців. От так і проживаємо на даний момент, і живемо цей момент. Війна йде, а треба триматися, держатися, ну, триматися за друг друга і, ну, виживати якся в цьому цей.
Everything is subservient to this war, including pregnancies, including births. I was astonished that Natalia shared this in such a calm tone. Christina did as well, for that matter. She too told me her story with a steady voice, without crying. It was almost fatalistic. I found that remarkable as well.
Коли я була вагітна другим хлопчиком, це коли він лежала в роддомі.
When I was in the hospital giving birth to my second son, the heavy bombings started again. I was terrified of going down to the shelter because it was so overcrowded. So we just ran out into the hallway instead. Shortly after he was born, my son had to undergo heart surgery due to an inflammation. We found ourselves back at the heart center a second time. And during our stay, the intense bombardments resumed. My boy was in the intensive care unit, while I was alone in the regular ward. It was an incredibly harrowing experience.
Хочеться, щоб хоч щось налагоджувалось.
Perhaps this is her way of coping with these memories. You cannot forget it and you do not want to forget it. Both of them are traumatized and without a doubt the children are too. But telling the story in such a matter-of-fact way is, I believe, a coping mechanism to keep from completely losing one's mind. Listening to them this morning, the same words keep coming up. Fear, sleep deprivation, sirens. And yet, these women are standing here with their children. They collect their diapers, baby food, and some clothing. Afterward, they head home, back to a daily life that is almost unimaginable in Germany. The distribution continues, box after box, package of diapers after package of diapers. For the volunteers, it is routine. For many of the families, it is not. For this Sunday to happen at all, it takes someone to organize everything. That woman is Maria Makimkova. She is energetic, vibrant, and full of life. Orange hair, manicured nails, and deeply, deeply dedicated. She founded the organization Serze Marigi, which translates to Heart of Mary. Shortly after the Russian invasion began in February 2022, she and her friends started helping out in destroyed villages. Later, they decided to focus their efforts on supporting mothers and young children. Many of the women arriving today are internally displaced persons, like Natalia, who fled a destroyed village in the Sumy region. Others live in Kyiv but have husbands fighting at the front. I asked Maria how she would describe the mood in the country after more than 4 years of war.
Ой, як сказати, настрій повністю у людей, всі тримаються. Ті, хто тут залишилися, це люди, які сильні, я вважаю, вони...
The people who have stayed are strong. They refuse to be driven to despair. They stand together and support one another. That is what our society is built upon right now.
І ми будемо, якби, чекаємо на перемогу і все, тримаємося всі гуртом. Допомагаємо один одному. На цьому, якби, ми будуємо наше суспільство зараз.
Matthias Maroon has also experienced this sense of solidarity time and again over the past 3 years. However, he is also noticing that organizing the aid missions is becoming more difficult. I ask him whether the willingness to donate is declining in Germany.
Yeah, kann man, glaube ich, definitiv feststellen.
Yes, definitely. It has been especially extreme over the past year. Donor attention has shifted to conflicts in Gaza, Israel, Lebanon, and Iran. Furthermore, the longer a war lasts, the more people think, what can you do? We can't help anyway. But that is nonsense. The people here are still facing the exact same problems.
These are the exact problems facing Katia, Natalia, Christina, and all the other women I met this morning. Perhaps that is the hardest part. The war has lasted so long that, for many people outside of Ukraine, it has simply become background noise. Reports of bombings in Kyiv are now accepted almost as an inevitability. Some people are even annoyed that it is still being reported on. Naturally, this makes things difficult, especially for humanitarian aid workers like Matthias or Wolfgang Kincher. For the people in Ukraine, the shelling has also become part of daily life. But it is something you can never truly get used to. You live with the air raid sirens every single night, every single day. You don't get any sleep. You have children who are terrified of the sirens. Husbands are dying at the front or returning mangled. You cannot just accept that. That is why there are always people like Katia, who break down in tears when they share what they go through every day. Before Matthias drove on, they finished the distribution after about 3 hours and then set off for Rivne, Essen's twin city. He told me one more story that had deeply moved him. It happened in February of this year. At the time, the Russians were heavily bombing Ukraine's critical infrastructure, electricity, heating, water. It was bitterly cold. This had a massive impact on daily life for people in Kyiv, especially those living in the high-rise apartment blocks, some of which have 20 or 25 stories. The pumps could only push water up to the second or third floor. Mats met a mother back then, who lived on the 23rd floor. Her story left a profound impression on him.
Und ein Fall, der mich extrem beschäftigt hat, war der einer Mutter, die mit ihren Kindern unterwegs war. Sie hat drei.
One case deeply shook me. A mother of five, three of whom are autistic, described the unimaginable toll of constantly climbing those stairs. Her oldest son could help a little, but she still had to carry the other children, along with all their water and groceries. I honestly don't know how she coped. She wasn't here today. I had hoped she would come so I could check on how she's doing.
Heute, ich hatte gehofft, sie kommt und ich könnte mal nachfragen, wie es aus ihr geworden ist oder wie sie das alles bewältigt hat. Aber sie ist heute nicht gekommen.
He had hoped to see her again. That was all he really wanted, just to know how she was doing. But she didn't come that day. Afterward, the two of them loaded the last few boxes, packed the van, and set off for Rivne. There, they visited several projects, including one at a hospital. They brought along equipment from the Gesellschaft für Internationale Zusammenarbeit, GIZ, for a new rehabilitation ward at Hospital No. 2, a project that the initiative Ukraine We Are Common has been supporting for a long time. They also brought a piano and other musical instruments for a center for children with disabilities and visited a facility for adults with disabilities. From there, it was straight back to Germany. These trips always last 4 to 5 days, incredibly intense journeys. From Essen to Rivne, it is 1,600 kilometers, with Kyiv adding another 200 kilometers on top. On top of that, crossing the border back and forth can take hours. Wolfgang told me they once had to wait 16 hours at the border. On this trip, it was 4 hours, but even that is exhausting in the blistering sun. And yet, they keep going back. Wolfgang told me that sometimes you come home thinking this was the last trip for a long time, but in reality, they find themselves on the road again anyway, every 2, 3, or 4 months to help the people in Ukraine. What does aid mean when a war has lasted so long that many people can barely bring themselves to look anymore? I think I found an answer on that Sunday morning. Sometimes aid looks remarkably simple. A package of diapers, baby food, a stuffed animal, a few warm blankets, or simply the knowledge that someone made a long journey from Germany. The most important thing is the message, you are not forgotten. There are people in Germany who, even after 4.5 years of war, have not lost sight of the fate of the Ukrainian people. I noticed this during the encounters on the ground as well, this fear of being forgotten and the sheer joy that someone still cares about their plight. I think back to Matthias's story about the heavily pregnant woman. Upon receiving a food package, she began to sing. No grand thank you, no long speeches, just a song. I think I finally understand why Matthias Maroon has never forgotten that song to this day. It doesn't change the front lines, but it shows a human being, you are not forgotten, and sometimes that is exactly what help is. That concludes today's episode of our podcast, In Crisis Mode. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister, who is also a journalist working for a radio station of the Funke Media Group. If this episode resonated with you, please like and follow us. It truly helps make our work more visible. If you know people whose stories belong on this podcast, please write to me at chrisandmodus@funkemedien.de. Take care of yourselves. See you soon. Bye for now.
Ein Podcast von Funke.